Welcome to Real Life with Pamela Lau. I'm so glad you're here. We're spending a couple episodes listening to people who work in fields that we don't get to hear too much about, how faith impacts their everyday jobs. Today, we have a very special guest, David Stidham. He serves as the Vice President of Business Affairs and General Counsel for The Chosen. Prior to working for The Chosen, however, he spent nearly 6 years as the General Counsel and Director of Licensing for Right Now Media, as well as 2 years working as an assistant district attorney in Dallas, Texas. I'm super excited for you to hear how David unpacks his journey from working in a courthouse in litigation to working for Right Now Media, helping authors and speakers, and then being offered a job with The Chosen and negotiating at the table. So I welcome David Stidham to Real Life with Pamela Lau. All right. Welcome, David Stidham, to Real Life with Pamela Lau. David, I've been waiting with great patience to have you on the show today. So thank you for agreeing and for taking the time.
Well, thank you as well. It's an honor to be here and a privilege to be speaking with you today.
So, you know, really, I was thinking about how I first met you, right? I mean, because it's like, how did we connect? And I was thinking, David, I think it was 2015 or 2016.
Somewhere in there, 2016, maybe 2017.
Okay. Yeah. When you were working for Right Now Media.
Correct.
And we had just put out, in 2015, some videos for the book, A Friend in Me, that I wrote. And so that's how you and I first connected. And we didn't really get to know each other that well then. But then through the years, I've kind of followed you a little bit, seeing what you're doing. And now you have a whole nother job. So let me stop talking. And why don't you just tell my audience a little bit of what you're up to today and what's your current role and responsibilities? What are you doing today?
Yeah, so I am the Vice President of Business Affairs and the General Counsel for The Chosen. So the TV show is of the same name, The Chosen, but the company behind it is called The Chosen Incorporated. So that's who I am working for today. And so let me kind of break down what those two avenues are. On the business affairs side, I mean, it is kind of self-explanatory, but primarily where I find myself day to day in that field is working with the talent on that business affairs side. So that could be, I mean, it's a multitude of things that you're doing, negotiating a lot, having conversations around, again, deal agreements and all sorts of things, distribution agreements. And then on the other side, the general counsel hat is everything legal that comes through. And often those two, there's a Venn diagram there with a big overlap, but they are two separate and distinct responsibilities.
Okay. It sounds like you're never, no day is the same.
That is correct.
that's actually very exciting. So, but you know, that's actually quite an honor that you get to work with The Chosen, for sure. I mean, that's like, they have like their own brand for sure. But why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? So like flesh out like a little bit about, I know that you have law degrees because I saw your bio, but a little bit more about your life, you know, how you became a Christian and things like that. We'd love to start with that.
Yeah. So let me kind of give a macro overview here and we can dive in wherever you think would be interesting or necessary. But I was raised in the church. So, I mean, I've been a Christian as long as I can remember. If the doors were open, my parents and my family were there. So, you know, all of my life, faith has been just crucial to everything I do, the lens that I look at the world through and all of that. But that doesn't mean I was always on the straight and narrow the whole time and didn't have my ups and downs. But when I was getting ready to go to college, there was a large secular university that I was debating between, or a smaller private Christian university that pretty much everyone in my family had gone to.
Okay.
And I kind of felt the pull towards the big secular university. All my friends were going there and all of that. But I ultimately decided, it's pretty crazy. One day I got a call from a recruiter, and I won't say his name on here, but I remember him and the call absolutely just with perfect clarity. And I had always just kind of turned down the recruiters when they would call me from this particular school. I had no interest in going there. My brother did it. My parents did it. Like, I want something new for me. But I remember him saying on that call, you know, you were coming up on a pivotal, basically junction in your life where you go to college can really set you up for the rest of your life, you know, career and spirituality and all that sort of stuff. So it kind of really caught me off guard. And basically by the end of the conversation, I was 2 weeks away from starting at this other university. Literally, I mean, it's early August. And I told him at the end of the phone, I said, I'll be there in 2 weeks. I'm going.
What was it that he said? What did he ask you?
It wasn't so much what he said, but what God said through him, if I can say it that way.
Okay.
And I had a peace and a clarity that I had never had. He asked me a lot of questions, you know, about my faith and you know, what I wanted to do. So my career, my major, all of those sorts of things. So again, there was a substantive conversation going on, but it was the Lord, I'm telling you, speaking to me at that time in a way that, again, I just had not experienced. And so when I hung up the phone, I went in and told my mom. She had been the one that answered the phone, and she just she's just in shock. It looks like she had just seen a ghost. And then she said, she called my dad, which is pretty funny. And she told my dad was driving home at the time. And she said, you need to pull over to the side of the road. I have something to tell you. And my dad just like broke down in tears when he heard that. And little did I know, like they had told me afterwards. I mean, that was the prayer they had had for years. They wanted me to go to that school. They wanted me to do that because they had such a great experience with it. So that is, again, a God, the way that God got me to where I was supposed to go at that school at that time. And I can pause there before I move on, but.
Sure, but it sounds like that you were even listening then, you know, like you had a bent toward listening to God a little bit there.
Absolutely. I mean, all of my human desires did not want to go there. I wanted to go to the bigger school, you know, for all the reasons that I had that were great. But again, God spoke to me in a way that time that I had never experienced in my okay. life up until that point.
That's profound. Would you say that you knew then that you were going to, that God was leading you into law, into the legal field?
Not at that point, no.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that trajectory.
Yeah. So I wanted to do business. And so at that point in my life, I didn't necessarily know. I kind of wanted to be a cardiologist at some point during high school.
Okay.
And I remember my mom was like, but you hate science. And I was like, well, do you need science to be a doctor? And she's like, David, come on. So that kind of put the kibosh on that.
That's
on me wanting to be in medicine. But yeah. I always had a desire for business. I didn't know what in business. So when I got to the school that my undergraduate school, it was called Harding University. When I got there, I started to fall in love with my business courses, kind of the core ones that you had to take. And of that, business law and marketing were the most interesting to me.
Okay.
And so they were the ones I didn't necessarily dread going to and, you know, didn't feel like I was checking a box. And so I ended up actually being a marketing major. And even though I had a desire to work in law and to do law, it wasn't until my girlfriend, who's now my wife, started dating, and she had kind of mentioned, you know, as I'm probably a junior or senior, she was like, you used to talk about law a lot. You seem interested in that. Like, have you ever thought about really doing that? And I'm like, you know, maybe it's interesting. Maybe there's something there. But it really wasn't until she started to kind of remind me, like, hey, you talk about it a lot. You seem interested, like through the books you read and all this. And so that was really kind of the first time that I would say that it really became something that I was focused on and really had that interest in.
That's, again, I'm hearing a theme that she listened to you, you know, like she was aware. So I see that's how God works in our lives as well. You know, he speaks through other people who care about us. Okay. So you really didn't deter then from that path. It's not like you had another career. You went straight to law school.
So when I graduated undergrad, I was a marketing major, and okay. my wife now, who was my girlfriend at the time, she was a year behind me. So I had the decision to make. I'd taken the LSAT. I'd done all that. Do I go to law school now, or do I, you know, hang around here to be near her? And so what I decided to do at this point in my life, I'm good at school. This is kind of all I've ever done in my life. I decided to get an MBA. So I basically buckled down, got my MBA in a year while she was finishing up her undergrad degree with the plan then to go to law school when I graduated with my MBA, which is what I did.
Yeah. So, okay. That feels like a very straight line in some ways. You know, like there wasn't a lot of like hemming and hawing. You knew it's kind of like God knew exactly where he wanted you to be. But did you take further training? I noticed in your bio that you had some training in negotiation.
Yeah. So let me tell you. Let me connect those dots for you. So in undergrad, one of the electives that I took, it was actually my senior year. And now that you kind of know the story I just told, this will be hopefully more interesting. I took negotiation my last semester, and when I had applied for grad school, and my application was pending the results of basically my GPA for that final semester. this is pretty crazy. My negotiation professor at the time had always said everything's negotiable but your salvation. And this was just kind of a mantra that he always used, basically just encouraging his students to say negotiate for anything.
Yeah.
So anyway, in order for me to get into grad school for my MBA program, I had to have a 4.0 my last semester. So when I got my grades back, I had A's in everything but negotiation. I had a B. So I kind of distraught, like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get to go to grad school or this particular one. And I was just like, you know what? Everything's negotiable but your salvation. So I pick up my phone and I call my professor. I'm like, Professor Davis, you know, blah, blah, blah. Here's who I am and all this stuff. We probably talked for 45 minutes to an hour. And at the end of the conversation, he says, you know what? You've proven to me you understood what I was trying to convey through my class. You understood the principles of negotiation that I was trying to instill to my students. You've earned your A.
That's a fantastic story.
So that started me on this, what I would say, path that negotiation to me is just, it's fascinating. So in law school, I took another negotiation course. And then after I graduated from law school, I went and got a graduate certificate in negotiation from the Harvard Business School online. And the reason I did that, the professor that taught me that, was basically the professor that had written all the books that I had learned negotiation from throughout the years. So it was kind of finally an opportunity to go sit at the feet of the master and learn. So yeah, that's how that all came together.
And of course, I'm dying to jump ahead and ask you how those negotiation skills play out in your daily life now, but maybe you can, you know, touch on that in a little bit, because I actually so agree. I think that many of us need those skills even if we're not working in the law field.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, absolutely.
So something that really caught my attention, David, was that you had a short time as an assistant district attorney.
Mm-hmm.
What was the path to saying yes to that?
Yeah. It's a non-traditional path, I think I could say with clarity. And it's probably the number one question I'm asked. So when I was in law school, I come in with this strong business background. I have an interest in law school, and really my quote unquote major was intellectual property. And law schools don't really do majors, but my school did something called a concentration where you basically spend your electives in one of these fields of law, and your transcript has a designation that, you know, you're a specialist in one of these fields. Sure. So intellectual property was my field. Again, with the business background, with marketing, trademarks, copyrights, all of that just seemed to really flow naturally together. When I was wrapping up my 3L year, getting ready to take the bar, I did not know what I wanted to do next. Now, if take a step back in the short time of my life that I was like, oh, I'm going to be an attorney. There were really two things that always stood out. I want to work for a sports organization, or I want to work in film and TV. And there was really no, I would say no preference there, but either one of those were, you're going to work in-house. And so that in-house attorney was really, I would say, the focus as I went forward. I will say this, no part of me has ever wanted to work in a law firm. That sounds miserable to me. And it still does to this day. So one of the things that I had told my professors, how do I get to that without going your traditional law firm route?
Great question.
And so several of my mentors and professors told me, they're like, well, if you can get your litigation experience early, that's going to be the best thing that will set you apart. And I'm like, well, outside of a law firm, how do I do that? DA's office. And it just kind of was one of those things that caught me off guard. Like, wait, what? And so the more I thought about it, and sure enough, my first week on the job, I was in trial. And so I knew my time there was going to be shorter. I wasn't going to make a career out of this, even though I loved it. The work was fun, rewarding, amazing. I just knew that my window had to be short. Otherwise, I was going to be a criminal attorney. And I did not want to do that the rest of my life.
I am amazed again at how it just seems like your path was like there was a light right on the next step, right on the next step. And you just kept saying yes, you know?
Yeah, that one was, again, when I left law school, it became clear that that was probably what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I went and took the bar. And as you're waiting your bar results, the DA's office near, it was in Dallas County in Texas. It was the eighth largest DA's office in the country. And so what they did was basically post-bar internships. Hey, all these people that aren't licensed to practice law, that are, you know, maybe above average intelligence in the law because they graduated law school, it was a free internship, basically until your bar results came in. And so I just threw my hat in the ring. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be great. I've got nothing else to do. I can't earn money as a lawyer because I'm not one yet. And it was a great opportunity, but from that internship is how I got my job. So I was fortunate enough to work in a court and work with several of the ADAs there that just gave me a recommendation, which is ultimately how you got those jobs at that time. You would have to have a recommendation from an attorney there. So Absolutely. It all worked out well.
So let's pivot just a little bit, because I think what my audience wants to hear from you, you know, is how faith plays a role in what you're doing. I mean, maybe even looking back a little bit at what you did, how faith played a role, how faith is playing a role now. What is the drama that unfolds for you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And what I would say, the way that faith, I mean, you've even kind of pointed out a few times, the way that it has played itself out was just being faithful. Again, making informed decisions, through prayer, through consulting other people, again, listening to those that you, whose opinion you value. And obviously, you know, it has to be aligned with what is acceptable and pleasing to the Lord. And so that was one thing that pretty early on, I remember I was, when I was wrapping up law school, I was trying to figure out where my wife and I were going to live. And we talked to our pastor and he basically said, look, you can search the scriptures all day, and not every question will have a direct answer. But what he says is, find what you want. You're going to have a desire and search the scriptures. If there's not a contradiction, it's called free will. Go do it. You know, oftentimes we can abuse that. It's like, well, no. This is really what I want to do, so I'm going to do it. But it was just really one of those kind of, it was so profound to me at the time to saying, like, I'm not going to open my Bible and be like, I should live in New York City. It's that clear.
Right.
And it was just really profound to me, you know, even though I'd been a Christian my whole life, just really kind of thinking through what that looks like for me and how I'm going to make those decisions. So that was just kind of something that I've always held very closely is, again, there's a few steps that you should do, have these conversations, pray about it. But when you have peace and it's not in contradiction to the Lord's will or the Lord's words that we find in scripture, go for it.
Yeah. So what I hear you really saying is, I love it. It makes me think of Psalm 37 that, you know, you delight yourself in the Lord and he gives you the desires of your heart. It's not like you said, this is what I want, but Lord, is this where you'd have us? So again, showing submission, yielding, even though you were trained very specifically in law, I think that that shows a humility, which is something that seems to be a necessity in operating in the world today. So let's talk a little bit about the last two roles that I've known you in, working at Right Now Media and The Chosen. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into those two roles?
Yeah. So as I was in, as an ADA working, like I said, I knew my time going into that job was going to be shorter. I didn't know what that looked like. So You start as a misdemeanor prosecutor. And at the time that I was promoted, I was one of, if not the fastest promotions up to felony. At the time, I was in misdemeanor 5 or 6 months before I was promoted to felony. So a majority of my time at the office was actually spent on felonies. So I got maybe what I should, the takeaway from that was I got more valuable experience quicker than I might have anticipated.
I see.
So once I was on that trajectory, I was closing in on 2 years. I'd been there just under 2 years. And really what happens then is you go from a, what I will say, a court of general jurisdiction where you, any kind of case comes through to a specialized court. And I was going to be heading to the child sexual abuse litigate or prosecution. And so it was one of those decisions where it's like, okay, the skills you learn by litigating those types of cases or prosecuting those types of cases, they're invaluable to the skill set of an attorney. But on the other side, while that was going to be, and I hate to say this, it was going to be an honor for my skill set and profession. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I knew with that level of experience and expertise, I had probably guaranteed myself and pigeonholed myself into a career in criminal law. So I saw that as a time to say, okay, this is where I can make a clean break. I've got great general experience, 2 years now kind of under my belt as an attorney. What's next? And so I started looking around the area where I lived, and I saw an opening at Right Now Media for the director of licensing. And now, again, with my business background, intellectual property law, all of these things, I was going to be negotiating the deals that I did with you.
Yeah. And what year would that, did you start with them?
I started in October of 2017.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So then that is when I met you then. Okay.
Yeah. And so I just kind of thought for a minute, I was like, oh my goodness, this could be a very logical next step. It wasn't a legal role primarily. So that was a leap of faith that I ultimately got to. But what I decided was I'm going to be working in film and television. I'm going to be working with intellectual property. I'm going to be doing all of these things that my skill set years ago was really gearing me up for. And so it seemed like a logical leap of faith. Now, my wife knew the president of the company and vouched for him personally, just that he was an amazing leader and somebody that you would want to work for. So that took a lot of the risk away, because I thought, well, if I land there and I just hate the job, I'm not working for terrible people.
Right.
That was one thing to me that was just like, okay, like this makes this kind of seemingly odd career shift a lot more justifiable. And when I interviewed for the position, I went back and forth with the president to say, look, I'm an attorney. How are you going to use my skills? And he says, look, we've had a vacancy in this role for 100-something days. I need somebody to be excited about the job, the job description as it's currently written, because we have a need. And that was really the wrestle that I had. But at the end of the day, kind of again, those variables along the way, mm-hmm. I had peace with it. I was excited about it. And I knew leaving that dark,
second world, I know,
and working for a faith-based entity, I was like, this seems right for me at this point in time.
Okay. So then you were there for what, 6 years?
Just under 6 years.
So what was the trajectory of The Chosen? Did you seek them out? Did something open up? Was it a relationship? Did you pray about this? I mean, like what?
Yeah. So it was a relationship primarily. In August of 2022. So 13 months ago, I had breakfast. One of my friends was passing through town who worked for The Chosen. He was an executive there.
Okay.
And as we kind of caught up and just had, breakfast, he mentioned at the end, he says, hey, we're looking for somebody that we're looking for a general counsel. We don't necessarily know what that is, but we've identified the need. Could I submit your name for that position? And I, kind of caught off guard. I was like, yeah, like, I think that's, again, that to me seemed like an opportunity. That just seemed like something out of the blue. God may or may not have orchestrated it, but let's explore this. And earlier in 2022, I had been recruited by one of the largest companies in the world to come in-house, and it didn't move the needle for me. I just wasn't excited.
Well, hold on. Let's back up just a second. Can you just describe what you meant by it didn't move the needle for you? This is important.
Large secular company, again, one of the largest in the world. I wasn't really excited about the prospect of working at this global secular company. The money was great. The job description, the perks, all of those things were really neat. But at the end of the day, I, at the time, just felt, I'm just going to be making these billionaires more money. I didn't get excited about
meaning. Maybe it lacked purpose, or
I think it did for me at this time. Now, again, people that work for those companies, there's nothing wrong with that. I just didn't feel the conviction to leave a ministry focused company to move to the secular at that point.
Can I ask you a question? Was that company still about film and that industry?
They do have a foot in that. I was not being recruited for that. So that could also be one of the dynamics that, like, this may actually help me from a resume standpoint, but for my career, it doesn't get me closer.
Okay, excellent. So then they put your name in and you got called
I was contacted by another member of the executive team. We had an interview and he basically just said, look, I don't know what the timeline for this is. We know this is a need, but could I bring you on as a contractor to basically help us with some of these day-to-day things? And I was like, well, that'd be an honor. So in October of last year, I started what I would say moonlighting for them, just handling some of these agreements that would come through day-to-day to help keep the ball moving. And I did that until late March, early April of this year, so 2023. And actually on Good Friday of this year, I got the job offer to move full time and join The Chosen.
Were you like you used the word honor twice, but would you say that's what it felt like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it was, I mean, kind of all along, again, I didn't necessarily view myself as the person that was going to move into that role, but I was playing a part in helping the organization get to where they needed to. And so while I had hoped that that would be something that I would be able to fill, I didn't think that was going to be what was going to happen for me. I was going to be a contractor for a while.
I know, but I just have to tell you, I'm really moved by your lack of presumption. Well, because I'm studying leadership in my doctoral program, and one of the qualities that comes up over and over in my interviews and with my stakeholders and my researchers is they say there's just not enough humility in leadership. And so I just want to highlight that not being presumptuous served you well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, I just never, again, I just didn't think I was going to be the one to fill that role. So towards the end, in March, the president of the company reached out to me and we had a conversation. I wouldn't even call it an interview, but from that, he connected me to somebody else on the executive team. And then, the job offer came through and I was really caught off guard by it. Again, I said I had hoped that would happen, but when it did, it was just kind of like, I almost thought that I was almost helping them find the profile of the person that I thought would fill that role.
And here I didn't. You.
Because I was like, why else would they want to talk to me in an interview style? But so that's really what I thought. I am literally helping them hire my replacement.
That's a terrific story. So tell us what it's like working for an organization like The Chosen, who's changing the culture of television.
It's been a lot. I've run fast. I've run hard. No day is the same. And I can assure you that. I mean, it's been a lot of fun. And it is reshaping. And God is using that show in amazing ways. So absolutely, it's really neat to be a part of something that you're seeing transform the culture around you. And I mean, even right now, I will wear, a t-shirt from The Chosen around town and people are like, oh my gosh, it's one of my favorite shows. Like, I have just never experienced something like that. Mm-hmm. Just anecdotally from my perspective, but just in general, it's just something that, again, I think we'll look back at this show and just kind of think there were a lot of things that came from this that I don't want to say reset the industry or things like that, but that did things in a different way that we kind of showed maybe are sustainable, a different way to think about certain things in this industry. And so it's really neat to be a part of it and be on the ground level to see some of that stuff.
I totally agree with you. there's very few channels and shows who have done what they've done for the kingdom, where people are saying, I actually felt closer to Jesus. I mean, that's what they say, and it's not for everyone, but for many, that's what they're saying. How do you use your negotiation skills in this job differently than you've done in your other roles?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I mean, when one, I will say I've used my negotiation skills literally every day of my professional career. More so now, because there is that faith element to what we do. So people in Hollywood look at us as, you're inferior to us, you're not the real deal, you're an imitator, I don't need to take you serious. So there is almost like I walk into every negotiation with an uphill fight. I'm already a peg below them from their perspective, regardless of what it is. So I have noticed that if anything, the skills that I've learned are even more crucial to what I do day in and day out than they ever have been before. Because before, I would say a lot of the time I've either walked into the negotiation with the power as a prosecutor, or I've walked in on level ground in my role at Right Now Media. You have a product I want. I have a distribution outlet you want. Let's find a deal. So now in my third legal job, I walk into everyone with an uphill battle. So it's really interesting to kind of see that and have that perspective as I walk into it, but knowing that the skills I've developed from those two jobs and my formal training have prepared me for a moment such as this.
That is a brilliant way of putting it, that you knew what you were negotiating for in those different roles. And again, you were being prepared to sharpen those skills in this role.
Yeah.
What do you mean by to help us all understand a little bit when it's an uphill battle, because you're looked down on, that people are condescending because it's Christian?
All the above. Absolutely. I mean, Hollywood doesn't want us to serve. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just curious what that sounds like. I mean, what is it? How is that communicated to you?
Yeah. Sometimes just outright. It's very blatant.
Okay.
Other times there is a sense from whether it be the agent or the attorney that is representing the talent or the talent themselves, which had less of that, of those unpleasant exchanges, but more so with the attorneys or agents representing them, is basically, you need to convince us that this is worth my client's time. I know what you may be doing is monetarily better or the same as some other opportunities. It may be, again, it may fit their schedule better. The location could be more desirable. Whatever that is, it's almost like I've got to convince you that our time, money, and efforts is more valuable than the other, what I would say, kind of secular opportunities that my client is seeing.
So you have to build an argument for that, you feel like, almost?
I think really the first step that I've noticed is I have to convince them I belong at the table.
Oh, fascinating.
So I'm negotiating my right to even be in their presence before I get to the substantive conversation of what I actually am presenting to you and why I actually need you.
It's interesting.
It's just been different than anything else I've ever done.
I love it. I think that just sounds like the world's best challenge.
It is. And that's the thing. I love it.
You believe in what you're doing. So if you imagine if you were in this role and you didn't believe in it.
Absolutely. And going back to a spot in the conversation earlier, when I was talking to this larger company, and again, I went through those interviews, and I was like, it didn't really move the needle for me. Yeah. I think what you just said hits the nail on the head. I wasn't as excited about it. So therefore, I don't think I could have done my job the way it needed to be done to accomplish what they were paying me to accomplish.
Well, that's good.
Did that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And it also sounds like integrity.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, it just really does. I'm just imagining, there are many people who are listening or who are in the world who are working in jobs where, they don't have that piece that you're talking about. And sure. They think, well, you know, I just need to stick it out. I need to remain loyal. And maybe all the while the spirit of God is saying, but there, it doesn't have to be this way. That's what that's what you've done a good job of, you know, deciphering and distinguishing that you can follow what's been put in you, find a place where you can work it out like that. And God has led you to work for what I think is a light in our world, a huge light.
Yeah, certainly in Hollywood, it is a light in that dark industry. But, you know, one thing that I've always said and held to, the grass is not always greener. So, I mean, if you find yourself in that spot and, you know, you're struggling, it may be time to leave. I think there are diagnostic questions you can ask and things that you can ascertain to figure that out. But one of the things is that I always had this philosophy of grow where you're planted. God has you here for a reason. And again, that reason may have expired. That reason may no longer be the same. Reasons can change. So that's one thing that I always did. It was flattering to have these large companies reach out to me and say, we think your skill set would benefit us. But at the same time, I didn't feel like my job at Right Now Media was done. And it was only until, again, another opportunity that I see as ministry came along with an impact maybe bigger at a macro level to where I was like, oh, this could be the next step. So that was one thing that I've just kind of always held to, even in, you know, throughout school and whatnot, grow where you're planted. And that's just one thing that I've always held, I would say, near and dear to my heart.
So as we're wrapping things up, because I could ask you so many questions about your job, but what I really want you to do is, and you already started it, but, you know, what advice do you have for those who are listening who want to pursue a career in law? And I actually want to add to this. In any kind of business or leadership field, you know, what is the sense of urgency for more believers to enter the marketplace?
Yeah. Let me start with the last question, because that is something that I feel, I just feel really convicted by. And as my time as an ADA, I saw this first and foremost, that I wish there were more people with my worldview that were in that place. It is a dark place. It's a hard place. It's not an exciting place to be, but the work that you do has, I mean, certainly for your time here on earth, for many of those people, I mean, you're talking sentences that are the rest of their lives. And so ensuring that you're doing those, making those decisions with the right worldview and for the right reasons. Some people deserve to die in prison. Others don't. Those are things that, again, when you're motivated by the wrong things, I don't think justice is served every time. And so that was something for me during that time that I wish there were more people involved in that. But also at the same time, because it's so dark and scary, people don't necessarily say, well, you know, I'm a strong believer. I'm going to go into that place. Now, I worked for Right Now Media, which was a nonprofit, you know, ministry. And that was a very different experience for me. But now where I currently am, I'm back into the belly of the beast. I'm in Hollywood. And again, a place that most people say, I mean, that's where you go to die as a Christian. You Christians don't make it out there. It'll eat you up and spit you out. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that I don't think it's for everyone, not just Hollywood, but just kind of working in what I would say those dark secular places. I think it's one of the things that if you feel, you know, excitement or passion or anything about, maybe that's a time to listen or lean into it. Maybe that is where God is calling you into those things and into those opportunities. Again, you look at my career path, none of those really made sense. Certainly not as an ADA, like that did not make any sense, but that prepared me for Right Now Media, which prepared me for The Chosen. And so again, when you look back with, you know, hindsight, it becomes clear, but during the time, it really wasn't. It was kind of a step of faith and being like, I can handle this. This will be fine. So yeah. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. But what I love that you've just done is you've kind of like cleared the road a little of some of the rubble that people in their 20s and 30s sometimes are struggling with. Like, should I be doing this? Is this the right path? When you are leaning in and trusting that God is knows, you know, 20 years down the road or whatever, you just said it, that you wouldn't have been prepared. You're back. You said, you know, I'm back in Hollywood where I started, and now you're equipped. So one last question is, so what builds your faith the most in this job?
There's a few. Let me personally, okay. For me, it's important every day to be in the Word, to spend time with God, reading, praying. You got to get yourself right. Because again, when I pick up the phone and I call one of those Hollywood agents and they're just the worst person on the planet, you've got to be prepared for that. My worth doesn't come from that person. And at the end of the day, I still have a job to do. So you can either work with me, but I'm going to be here one way or the other. So ensuring that I'm aligned with God. And again, that sounds so cliche, but it's so important because I'm going to, throughout my day, for most of the hours of my day, I'm being hit by what the world says, like, you don't belong here. You shouldn't be here. So if I'm finding my worth in that, I'm not going to last long. But when I find my worth in God, I know that, again, what they say really doesn't matter to me. So I would say, for one, that has to be, and I think that's paramount to anything else. The second is the impact that I'm seeing that the show has. Again, you're taking on an industry that Christian content does not make it in Hollywood for various reasons. And yet we're rising above it. We're on the secular streaming platforms. We're having success that they are just like, oh my gosh, we never would have anticipated your show having. So you're just seeing this growing, the momentum behind this series, and you're seeing that starting to impact at a macro level, the world that I live in. And that may be too much of an overstatement or maybe even overdramatic. But when we sit here and I hear, again, people writing in the impact the show has had on their lives, and you hear those personal testimonies along with the what I would say is kind of the macro level success, mm-hmm. It speaks to you in a different way. And it's really, really neat. And I think both of those are important to move forward. And I think they actually, you have to have one, you can't have one without the other. They work in tandem with one another.
I agree. And David, we are all going to be praying for you in this, because this is an important role. And I just feel like we're on the sidelines going, go, yay, this is awesome. We're praying. Thank you so much for sharing with us the way you did. I'm so inspired. So,
well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. And again, it was an honor to talk to you today. I really, really appreciate the opportunity and all that you're doing to build into the next generation. And again, just thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet. Well, we will be in touch.
Thank you so much.